Well, I still haven't decided exactly what this tape is going to be about, but I have a few minutes here before Gene comes over to help me work with archiving photographs and files. And there's a lot of things I've been thinking about. Haven't recorded anything for a while, so I think maybe what I'll try now, which I hope I haven't already done, is talk about my political development in college, and you know, sort of with its roots in high school and junior high and childhood. So I think I've already talked about the fact that I did have a sort of a vague sense of class and race and gender when I was growing up as a child. You know, the I think I've talked about that there were no black people living in my neighborhood of Shaker Heights. And that the only black people I ever saw there or at school were workers. And the ones in Shaker Heights didn't live there. They would come in and pick up trucks, or if they were men, doing yard work. Or they would come in on the trolley from downtown Cleveland if they were maids or cooks or something along that line. And they were clearly, as I would say now, looking back, the other. It wasn't as though people or myself despised them. We just didn't know them. They were just about invisible. They were black people. As I got older, we started hearing about black people doing things in civil rights. And, of course, as I got up to be old enough to take the trolley downtown, one of my most vivid memories was going down to a Cleveland Indians baseball game when I was maybe 12 or so, and the train sort of started up on top of the ground in Shaker Heights, which was all these big houses and tree-lined streets and open space and clean and safe and blah, blah, blah. And you get down past Shaker Square and the trolley tracks start sinking down into like a big gorge that, looking back, was obviously man-made, maybe to separate the trolleys from the people who lived up above. I don't know. I'm not sure why. But you can see the neighborhoods, and in my first glimpse of these neighborhoods, I thought, this is some kind of desolated area. Nobody lives here. It's all dark. It's all sooty. It's all little tiny shacks and what looked like burned out or bombed out or not unoccupied buildings. But there were clearly people there. And it came as a great shock as I got a little bit older to realize that when I would go to an Indians baseball game, I would travel down through this community of black people that lived in conditions that had first struck me as being after a bomb dropped. Clearly poor. And then you'd finally get to the Terminal Tower, which was the tallest building in Cleveland, and that's where all the banks and the businesses had their businessmen had their offices, and it was all, you know, you'd come in and it was all concrete, and you'd go underground a little bit in a tunnel, and then you'd get off and go up some stairs or some escalators or something like that, and then you'd be in this big, open, fancy space with fancy shops and the floors and the walls made of polished marble. And, you know, that was certainly one of my strongest senses of class by the time I was coming of age. You know, right around 1960 or a little bit before. So, and of course, I also had this experience with Mike Jackson out in Madison, where my mother wouldn't let me play with him anymore because he wasn't our kind of people. And my mother always emphasized how my father was a professional engineer, not just an engineer. And he would tell stories around the dinner table that were really sort of adventurous stories about experience he had as on his jobs. And he was hired as a overseer for all the subcontractors to make sure that they did everything according to regulations and specifications, you know, that the materials were the proper kind and that they were all up to code and that everything was in straight and so on and so forth. And he used to tell stories that to me were very funny about, you know, architects who design buildings with these huge air conditioning systems and no way to get them into the building. So once the building got up, they realized there was no way to get them in. Or all kinds of people with book knowledge who did stupid things because they didn't have hands-on practical experience. And then he would tell stories also about the unions. And basically the impression I got of unions from him was that they were all corrupt and tyrannical and dangerous and hooked in with organized crime, which may or may not have been true. And he would talk about the workers, and he would call them micks and spicks. And I don't know if they had black workers. I never heard him use the N-word, but, you know, these were white working class people who, even beyond the black people who came into Shaker Heights to be servants of some kind, there were no white working class people in Shaker Heights that I knew of. Certainly not who lived there. And maybe on the fringes, as I learned in high school, because I dated, you know, somebody who lived in an apartment with her single mother. And, you know, looking back, I can say she was no doubt working class. But Cleveland is overwhelmingly a working class city, and I had no idea. But I did hear these stories, and there were pretty much a lot of derogatory stereotypes, although not said with any kind of viciousness or anger or anything. It was just, you know, I guess it was just common parlance, the way people talked, white people who were Protestant. And so, you know, all of those things gave me a sense of class. And then certainly I had a sense of gender and sex, although I never would have thought of those terms, because I went to a private boys' school, and most all the people that I hung around with or dated went to private schools. Girls' schools or boys' schools. And it was only when I was in high school that I started getting, where I actually dated girls who went to Shaker Heights High or Byron Junior High. And I think I've talked about that some too. Because I had always dated girls from Laurel, which is a private girls' school. And my first big crush was actually on Pam Hopkins in about second grade, when I suppose I was about 8 or 9. And for some reason, she lived on the next street over on the other side of Malvern School. And my mother seemed to like her family. And, you know, she was blonde, Protestant, and my mother apparently knew her family. I'm going to take a break here because Jean just came.